thanks for tuning in. You know, regardless of what I think about the health insurance reform bill that looks like it's going to become law, it is just exquisitely enjoyable, almost as good as sex, to watch the Republicans running around Congress and TV cameras and little meeting rooms with their heads cut off today and their hair on fire. It is just great fun. I swear to God, I want more of that. I want more of that. And who was it? Was it Tom Coburn who had a little press briefing and he said, for all the people who voted no, if you vote yes now, next session, if you come up for a federal nominee and you know, you don't get reelected and come up for a federal nominee, there will be a hold on you. Ooh, what a threatening little punk. We'll get to all that a little bit later tonight. You know, I'm in the very awkward position, once again, of having to talk about myself a little bit here. I don't, you know, way back in the day when I did have a few classes in journalism, most of which were learned on the job, it was made very clear to me, you don't become part of the story. Now, I realize what I do here is not journalism. Far from it. This is just opinion. From me, and it's sitting around talking about some of the issues. You know what the attitude here is. We don't aim to educate. If you want education, you tune in to Tom Hartman. If you want emotional release, you tune in here. Or to get more pissed off, one of the two, whatever. But after the program last night, Kathy, I was getting ready to go up and have a cup of peppermint tea. And Kathy said, sit down a second. I need to talk to you. Uh-oh. And she let me know that we had just finished up 3 hours of an awful lot of bad language from me. And she said, she said, I'm talking to you as, I'm paraphrasing here, but something like, I'm talking to you as your wife as well as your producer. And you got to ease up. I didn't say the F word. She said, no. It's not that. It's just too many GDs and SOBs. You've got to ease up. I said, well, okay. You know, you listen to your producer. If your producer happens to be your spouse, you listen a little bit more intently or attentively or whatever. So, quick discussion. She just gave me that look that, if you've ever been married or you have a partner, you know what that look means. It is the look that says, I'm really telling you the truth. I don't want to go into this in any depth. Don't jump on your defensive high horse. Just listen to what I'm saying. Okay, so today I thought about it, and I listened to some of the excerpts from the program last night, and it was pretty brutal. And I do, first of all, I want to apologize to all the people who are offended by the bad language. Okay, the apology is over. Now, let me say this. I'm going to make that effort again to stop it, because it is ridiculous. I'm not saying I'll never say hell or damn or an occasional son of a bitch, but not like it's been here. But let me tell you why. You know, I have been heavily involved in the emotion of talk radio since IE America, which was like 10 years ago, IE America, and then a stretch of about 6 or 7 months unemployment, and then Air America when it came together, and then Nova M, and now on our own. And during that period of time, I have watched the political system in this country just unravel, just go up in flames. We don't have a political system anymore. As Chris Hedges wrote today, we stand on the cusp of one of humanity's most dangerous moments. If you get a chance to read this, read it. It's at alternet.org. It's an astonishing essay. It's too long to share with you on the air. But I watched not only our political system catch fire and burn down. We don't have one anymore. It's now belongs to corporate America. We do not have a political system any longer. It belongs to corporate America. I'd say it a third time, but what's the point? Barack Obama is a brand. He is not. He's not an idealist. His intentions are good, I would imagine, but he is another corporate trickster for whatever reason. I'm not putting him in the same class as Bush. I'm not even putting him in the same class as Bill Clinton. But Barack Obama, bless his heart, was advertised to us as something. He was sold the same way that a new product is sold. So having said all that, it's left me with just these emotional volcanoes. I don't know what to do. I watch these smug right-wingers, the neo-Nazis, who think the axe is not going to come down on their head once this becomes a complete corporate takeover in this country. And they're wrong, because it will. The useful idiots are the first to get the knife when finally the revolution is complete. And there is a revolution going on. It is not the kind that we usually think of. It is a corporate revolution. It has been going on for 30 years. It has been inexorable. It's been slow, but just it keeps moving. And one of the reasons it's been so successful is because the average person has been flummoxed. We have been dazzled with trinkets and toys and junk and garbage and horse crap and movies and emotions and books and lies and cheats and television and Xboxes and Y boxes and Z boxes and yada yada, on and on. Cheap goods, buy, spend, mortgage your house, everything. While the political system has just spiraled out of control. That's left me furious. Absolutely furious. I'm not a dumbass by any means. I'm not the brightest man in the world, but I will guarantee you that since the assassination of John Kennedy, I have been forced to study and be aware of what has gone on in this country for the past 47, or is it, yeah, 47 years? Yeah. And it has left me furious. I'm one little tiny voice on a 25-cent radio program that you can pick up globally. I recognize that. Every time I get attacked by one of these half-witted red state websites, you know, hey, you're only on 14 stations. That doesn't mean anything anymore with XM and Sirius and the Internet. You know, it's a global program. So, you know, you guys that write to me about that stuff, stick it in your ear. You know, really, you sound like a bunch of kids from the 1980s. But anyway, it leaves me furious. And since this is just a tiny little 25-cent radio program where we have no real power whatsoever, and we don't, it's frustrating. Of the thousands of people who listen to this program, and we have estimates that are immaterial, but of the hundreds of thousands, I should say, I don't know, maybe it's millions, I don't know, but of the people who listen, we have a pretty steady dialogue with a lot of these people. And I know a lot of these people overlook the language because they're just as furious. When I think about what the Bush crime family, when I think about Dick Cheney on the floor of the Senate saying to Pat Leahy to go F himself. See, the language is fine as long as nobody hears it. That apparently is the rule. When Bush and Cheney were standing up there making the snide remark, the obscene remark about the New York Times reporter. Remember all this. You know, what these politicians, what average normal people like me use, the kind of language we use when we're angry, is pretty much standard. Okay? They get away with it. Right-wingers get away with it. Now, the right-wingers made it very clear. Don't cuss on the air. Suck in all the stupid people, all the ignorant people. Suck in the Christians. We need the Christians. The Christians are going to be the ones who keep everybody in order while we take over the country. The wedding between corporate America and Pentecostal or evangelical Christians is just about complete. And it's a gay wedding, but it doesn't make any difference in this regard. So it is difficult to contain the rage is what I'm trying to say, knowing full well that in my little 25-cent radio program, if I say too many GDs or SOBs, it's going to offend people. And I understand how it would be offensive. I do. I'm not knocking the idea that the language I use on this program can be offensive, especially if you're driving home and you tune in one of the radio stations at Carius or XM or Sirius and hear a string of cuss words, the kind that, you know, you don't necessarily want your kids to hear or what have you. Now, I've got some more to say about this, then I'm going to move on. And don't email me about it. You really don't have to email me about this, okay? I just want to get this said. Just give me another couple of minutes, and then we'll move on. past the hour. All right, just to wrap this up, having to deal with rage on the level that I do, and I know a lot of people do also, because I get emails from people constantly, just a steady flow. You know, I get them from the screwballs, but the screwballs are pretty much filtered out at this point. Whatever screwball gets through, we usually use that email on our Molloy's Uncensored mailbag and just make total fun of these jerks. But the people, the real people who write, who say invariably, yeah, your language is raw and rough, but that's exactly how I feel. I wish I could say the same thing, but I can't. And I understand that. But I am using, no, I can't say I'm using the public airwaves, because they're not the public airwaves anymore. They don't belong to the public. They haven't since the Clinton era, when the consolidation occurred. And all of a sudden, the airwaves belong to corporate America. But the reality is there's got to be a way for me or you to control the rage. You know, this diffuse anger that spills out of this program every night serves really no purpose. As a matter of fact, it serves a negative purpose, I guess, or it has a negative flow, because once the anger's expended, then what? You know, go get in bed and read Catcher in the Rye again. So to the people who are offended, and I understand the offensiveness of the language I use sometimes, I honestly apologize. No qualifications. I just honestly apologize. I should not do that. To those of you who would like to email, and I hope you don't, and say, no, keep doing it. Can't. Now, again, I'm not saying that all of a sudden I'm going to take, you know, like my grandmother used to do, if I said the word heck and wash out my own mouth with lava soap. No, I'm not going to do that. There will be an occasional slip. Not a slip, but an occasional cuss word for emphasis. But I just want you to know that I do apologize for the language, especially last night. I'm talking about the cuss words. I'm not talking about the things I've said. I'm not talking about the point of view. You know, I still think that Clarence Thomas and his old lady Jenny are a couple of thugs. You know, a con artist, liars, sneaks, cheats. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the use of rough language, just the cussing. That's all. That's the only thing. As far as points of view, of course I'll never back down. Are you kidding me? So, having said all that, once again, final time, deep apology to the people who are offended. I understand the offense. No qualifications on the apology. It's honest. And the rage is just going to have to find a different way. I may have to take up boxing again. I took boxing in the YMCA 1,000 years ago. And you know, got into competition for a while. I don't recommend it to anybody, because it's the most exhausting sport I've ever been in. But, you know, somebody told me, look, come back. You know, we're members of the Y, but just, you know, come back to the Y. Get on the body bag. I tried to do it with, you know, weights and walking 4 miles a day with two 3 pound weights, one in each hand, you know, those little barbells. But you know, right after you exercise, you know the feeling. You do feel a little bit. You feel some of the stress and some of the anger relieved, but it comes back over the course of the day. I've tried to eliminate television, because every time I see a Republican or a conservative or a right winger and I listen to the lies and see what they're saying, you know, I it just boom comes boiling back. Now, as far as having an adverse effect on me, apparently it doesn't. You know, my BP readings go like 110 over 69 or 70 or 64. So it's not that. It's just the offensiveness of the language. So there are a couple of program directors over the course of the last year who asked me, of the station owners who asked me, I told you about Janet, KTNF in Minneapolis, who said, you know, come on. You've got to back off a little bit. And there have been a couple more. So... But mostly I'm talking about the people who have written to me and said, we love your program, we like your point of view, but please, just just a little bit. Just dial it back a little bit. It's dialed. Okay. All right, we have a lot of stuff here. There's a document that was obtained by the ACLU under the Freedom of Information Act Tuesday, March 16th. What's the date today? This is Thursday, March 18th. So we're talking 2 days ago. And this is reported by Gregory Payton, or Patton, in the Orlando Independent Examiner. It's also at, prisonplanet.com, Paul Joseph Watson's website. And I want to talk about it a little bit when we come back. It's a document obtained by the ACLU where the 9/11 Commission was warned on January 6, 2004 by three top-level Bush crime family officials to, quote, not cross the line, end quote, in the investigation of the events that occurred on September 11, 2001. We'll have that in a little bit more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. You know, several years ago, Sean Hannity, who is a thief, he steals from wounded soldiers. He steals from the orphans of dead soldiers. He is an absolute thief. He put together something called Freedom Alliance Charity. And he started these freedom concerts. Remember those across America? Debbie Schlossel, writing at her website, and we'll put a link up at my website to this whole piece that she wrote. But Schlossel has written about the scam that he's running. One of the reasons she's writing about it, tomorrow night, Sean Hannity is going to be honored with an award for his, quote, outstanding community service by radio talk show host, end quote, at a Talkers Magazine convention. Talkers Magazine is a cluster chuck of right-wing freaks that get together and give each other awards. It's run by somebody named Michael Harrison. I don't know what his name was before he changed it, but now he uses the name Michael Harrison. He's a right-winger of the highest degree. I used to be one of his favorite boys until I started broaching subjects that he didn't like. And then all of a sudden I became persona non grata, which is fine with me. My company still advertises in his magazine, much to my chagrin, but I have business partners who say, nah, come on, this is, you know, it's an advertiser. I don't like doing that, but I defer where it comes to business to the business partner. That's why they're business partners, right? So, Hannity will be given this award by these right-wing morons tomorrow night, and he will revel in it. As Debbie Schlossel writes, it's all a huge scam. In fact, less than 20%, and in two recent years, less than 7% and 4% respectively of all the money raised by Freedom Alliance, and it's in the millions, went to these causes. While millions of dollars went to expenses, including consultants and apparently to ferret the Hannity posse of family and friends in high style. And despite Hannity's statements to the contrary on his nationally syndicated radio show, few of the children of fallen soldiers, that means dead soldiers, got more than $1,000 or $2,000, with apparently none getting more than $6,000, while Freedom Alliance appears to have raised tens of thousands of dollars for private planes. Moreover, despite written assurances to donors that all money raised would go directly to scholarships for the kids of the fallen heroes and not to expenses, they have begun charging expenses of nearly $500,000 to give out just over $800,000 in scholarships. In February 2009, a well-known conservative writer sent me this about a friend at Fox News. This is what Debbie Schlossel got, quote, The guy went on to, the guy told me about Hannity's freedom concerts, which are staged across the country with the proceeds going to children of slain soldiers. Of course, as the guy tells it, there'd be a lot more money every concert to go to the cause if Hannity didn't demand and get use of a Gulfstream 5 plane to fly him and his family entourage to the concerts. A fleet, that's the word the guy used, either Cadillac or Lincoln SUVs for him and his family and entourage, and several suites at really expensive hotels for him and his family entourage. The promoter apparently values Hannity's star demands as well as over $200,000 per event. The source said that he heard Oliver North pulled Hannity aside at one of the concerts and told him this had to stop. But that may mean that from now on, Hannity has to fly on a G4 instead of a G5, gets only a few luxury SUVs and two or three suites. Oliver North, in addition to being a convicted felon, is the founder and honorary chairman of Freedom Alliance. And Debbie Schlussel goes on. This is a lengthy article. We're going to put a link to this. And you've got to read this. Freedom Alliance tax forms, which were signed in November 2009, and filed only recently. That year, Freedom Alliance took in $8,781,431 in revenue and gave $1,060,275.57 total, or just 12%, to seriously wounded soldiers and for scholarships to kids of the fallen. Remember, this is well below the 75% required to be considered a legitimate charity. And after claiming in written letters to donors that 100% of the money donated via the Freedom Concerts or otherwise to the scholarships would go directly to the scholarships and not to expenses, the Freedom Alliance decided to do the contrary and charge expenses anyway. And it just goes on and on and on, on and on and on. Freedom Alliance spent $5,375, or 61% of its total revenue earned in 2008, on expenses. But actually 80% of the total revenue spent and given out for that year. That includes $1 million spent on postage, $925,000 spent on printing, $157,000 on travel. It's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. Hannity is a cheap punk thief. That's all he's ever been. He tied himself to Newt Gingrich's coattails here in Atlanta 16 years ago, and that's been his ride, his free ride ever since. He's a liar. He's a punk. He's a thief. He steals from dead soldiers. He uses dead soldiers as a means of stealing money from people in this country who may or may not, I don't care what their political attitude is. If they send anything to Hannity, they must be right-wing freaks themselves. But he uses the children of dead or severely wounded soldiers to raise money. This is worse than these televangelists. Hannity is a punk. He's a garbage-collecting bastard. And this is what he does. Millions of dollars that he collects. Oh, yeah, we're going to give it to the poor little kids. Come here, poor little kid. Here, smile for Sean. Look in the camera. Okay, let him see. What happened to Daddy? Oh, Daddy was blown into pieces. Oh, well, we're going to raise money for you, Junior. And then this filthy, degenerate right-winger takes the money and spends it. Hannity, why don't you just break open their graves after they're buried and steal their medals? Maybe you can pawn them. Why don't you do that, you lousy punk? Why don't you just steal their medals? Why don't you go to the funeral home and nobody's looking, steal their watches or their rings? Some of these guys are buried with that. Come on, Sean, you're letting an awful lot of loot get away from you, you filthy pig. Now, who cares about this? Huh? You think the right-wingers do? Malloy, how many radio stations are you on? That's the kind of response I'm sure I'll get. But for you conservatives, you people in the military, don't forget, Sean Hannity had many chances to join up if he wanted to. He's a coward. He's an absolute coward. And he just stomps on you people in uniform. He stomps on dead people, dead soldiers. And he abuses. If these soldiers were alive and saw what Hannity was doing, they'd put a bullet between his beady eyes. You can count on that. You know they would. He rips off children and widows. I mean, that's almost like a movie from the 30s, right? You expect to see Hannity twirling his mustache, and then this filthy rag, Talkers Magazine, is going to give him an award tomorrow night. An award. See, this is the part where I normally start screaming and cussing. Now, if you want to hear the capper to this story, this Debbie Schlossel is a right winger. She's an absolute right winger. You can look her up on Wikipedia if you want to. So, something must have happened that would cause Debbie Schlossel to blow the whistle on this screwball. It's something terrible must have happened. So just so you know, every time you see this little weasel, if you watch him on Fox News, just remember, he is a child molester. In a way, in his own inimitable way, he rapes the widows of dead soldiers. He rapes them. He emotionally rapes them. If these soldiers were alive and they heard about this, Hannity wouldn't be. You know it as well as I do. So for anybody who still monitors this program from the Flying Monkey Right, another example of the people who gouge you, rip you, steal from you, lie to you, just do anything they can to get your money, to break you, to make you feel like, I don't know, like a serf while they ride high on the hog. Millions of dollars this filthy, filthy pig has stolen from the families of dead soldiers. Millions. How does that make you feel? Come on, you right-wing punks. Send me an email about this one. Huh? Savages. Man. Now, a lot of us who've known Sean for a lot of years are not the least bit surprised. Sean always has been just a talentless, lying little sneak. But here you are. Here you go. The tax returns don't lie. The charitable, the papers that have to be filed by these charities don't lie. Sean Hannity steals from dead soldiers, he molests their children, and he rapes the widows. Nice.
Well, look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free.
Before the hour, Gregory Patton writing at Orlando Independent Examiner and Paul Joseph Watson at PrisonPlanet.com are not breaking new news. I mean, we certainly understood that the 9/11 Commission had been warned. But now it's a matter of record. According to a document obtained by the ACLU under the Freedom of Information Act, yesterday, day before yesterday, the commission was warned on January 6, 2004 by high-level administration officials to, quote, not cross the line, end quote, in the investigation of the events that occurred on September 11th. Those high-level administration officials included Attorney General at the time John Ashcroft, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, CIA Director George Tenet. The ACO described it as a fax sent by David Addington, who was the counsel to Dick Cheney. So there they are again. That was the warning. It was a fax signed off on by Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, Tenet, Cheney, and Addington. The government officials urged the 9/11 Commission, quote, not to further pursue the proposed request to participate in the questioning of detainees, end quote. That's according to the letter, citing the need, this is what they always say, to, quote, safeguard the national security, including protection of Americans from future terrorist attacks, end quote. Marcy Wheeler, writing for Fire Dog Lake, speculates that the memo was an attempt by Bush administration to keep the torture of detainees from going public at the time. To many others, including Colleen Crowley, she's the former FBI agent who has been offering testimony to any intelligence committee that will listen. To her, the memo is only a small part of a cover-up that effectively gagged the 9/11 Commission from any real fact-finding. Ms. Crowley was recently interviewed by Scott Horton, professor at Columbia Law School and contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. In the interview, she stated, quote, that FBI minders listened to her every word to trail her and make sure she did not tell government personnel with top secret clearance, even higher than her own, anything which the FBI did not want to be told, to be made public. The warning in the memo released by the government to the ACLU is just one example of how the Bush administration fiercely struggled to prevent the 9/11 Commission from conducting a deeper probe into the attacks. It is common knowledge that Bush and Cheney refused to cooperate with the investigation, and when forced to do so, only testified together and not under oath. Isn't that nice, huh? Hey, you right-wing punks, what do you think of that? Little Dick and little George just went hand in hand before the commission and sat there. No, you're going to swear us in. Oh, no. Because then, when our lies came out, we would also be charged with perjury. Oh, no. No swearing in. Gregory Payton goes on, what may not be known to many Americans is that members of the 9/11 Commission have publicly stated that the investigation was a whitewash and stymied from the beginning. John Farmer, the senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission, said that the government agreed not to tell the truth about 9/11, echoing the assertions of fellow 9/11 Commission members who concluded that the Pentagon was engaged in deliberate deception. Senator Max Cleland, who resigned from the 9/11 Commission after calling it, quote, a national scandal, end quote, stated in a 2003 PBS interview, quote, I'm saying that's deliberate. I am saying that the delay in relating this information to the American public out of a hearing, a series of hearings that several members of Congress knew 8 or 10 months ago, including Bob Graham and others, that was deliberately slow walk. The 9/11 Commission was deliberately slow walk because the administration's policy was, and its priority was, we're going to take Saddam Hussein out, end quote. On Democracy Now!, Cleland also said, quote, one of these days we will have to get the full story because the 9/11 issue is so important to Americans, but this White House wants to cover it up, referring to Bush. End quote. In 2006, the Washington Post reported that several members of the 9/11 Commission suspected deception on the part of the Pentagon. The Post said, quote, some staff members and commissioners of the September 11 panel concluded that the Pentagon's initial story of how it reacted to the terrorist attack may have been part of a deliberate effort to mislead the commission and the public rather than a reflection of the fog of events on that day, according to sources involved in the debate, end quote. 9/11 Commissioner Bob Kerry also has unanswered questions. According to an article on Salon.com, he believes that there are legitimate reasons to believe an alternative version to the official story. Kerry said, quote, there are ample reasons to suspect that there may be some alternative to what we outlined in our version, end quote. Commissioner Tim Romer suggested that commission members were considering a criminal probe of false statements. Romer told CNN, quote, We were extremely frustrated with the false statements we were getting. We were not sure of the intent, whether it was to deceive the commission or merely part of the fumbling bureaucracy, end quote. Well, let me send you a news flash, Tim. Fumbling bureaucracy, my ass. This is a deliberate attempt to lie because George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of these thugs were directly, either by letting it happen or making it happen, directly involved in the events of September 11th. When will this come out? When will the truth come out? Well, when will the truth about the Kennedy assassination come out? When will the truth about the King assassination come out? You know, who knows? But you know, and I know, and anyone with a brain understands fully that the official story of what occurred in this country on September 11, 2001 is a total lie. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. You know, in light of that Hannity stuff, I wonder why this event tomorrow, I guess, is going to be in New York, where Sean would be given an award for emotionally raping the wives of dead soldiers, physically abusing their children, and disrespecting their corpses because Sean Hannity steals from them. He has these rallies where in some instances 5% of the money collected go. But Sean's a star. He's a big man. But what would happen if a squad of not dead Marines were to show up, maybe retired Marines, maybe Marines who just happened to hear this program and haven't been deployed? What would happen if a squad of Marines would show up at this awards dinner tomorrow night and walk in, unarmed, of course, and demand that Sean Hannity and his phony Freedom Company provide for them a complete record of all the money collected and who it went to and how much went to Sean and his family and his gang and his posse and his entourage? That would be fun, wouldn't it? Were I a Marine, active duty, retired or otherwise, that's exactly what I would do tomorrow night. I would get on a plane here in Atlanta and head my ass north, find out where this phony-ass little event's going to be held tomorrow, and walk in, unarmed, of course, and demand that this punk, this chicken hawk punk right-wing Fox News lying bastard, reveal everything about his freedom nonsense. Huh? He's been walking on the corpses of dead Marines for years, and dead soldiers. Sean, if there is a hell, you've got a front row seat, buddy. Typical, typical right-wing chicken hawk garbage. If you're a veteran and you listen to this punk, are you going to sit back on your butt and allow this to go on? Huh? You going to do anything? Hey, soldier. Hey, Marine. You going to do anything? As far as the 9/11 Commission and the lies that were told there, I got an email here from one of our regulars, PBS, not the network. And, of course, a lot of you know this already about the book The Ground Truth, the story behind America's defense on 9/11. It's written by John Farmer. Excuse me, John Farmer, who is he was former governor of New York or New Jersey, right? A law school dean at Rutgers, former attorney general of New Jersey. Is that right? Is he former governor? The little review here that was sent to me, the book unveils how, quote, the public had been seriously misled about what occurred during the morning of the attacks, end quote. And Farmer himself states that, quote, at some level of the government, at some point in time, there was an agreement not to tell the truth about what happened, end quote. Now, if that's the case, if there was an agreement not to tell the truth, then the next question is why? And the next question is, what truth was being concealed? Ostensibly, what was being covered up, according to the memo sent by Cheney, over the signatures of these three high-level government officials, what was being covered up was torture of the detainees. That's the cover story. That's nonsense. That's garbage. Utter, absolute nonsense. At the time, nobody on the 9/11 Commission, I don't believe, knew anything about so-called enhanced interrogation or torture. Maybe they did. But the reason the memo was sent by Cheney to the 9/11 Commission was to steer them away from any effort to get at the truth. And the truth is that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were instrumental in the deaths of 3,000 people on our soil, the collapse of the trade towers, the attack on the Pentagon, and the deaths of people from Flight 93 in Pennsylvania. Dick Cheney and George W. Bush are saturated in that blood. You know it as well as I do. Now, in law, if you conspire to commit murder, you're as guilty as the people who pulled the trigger. So include in that little nest of Nazis the Christian, the loud, noisy Christian, John Ashcroft, the psychopathic Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, and the FBI director, what's his name? Not Mueller, the other one. Was it FBI or CIA? I don't know. It doesn't matter. In August 2006, Well, I've already quoted that for you. The report reveals how the 10-member commission deeply suspected the deception to the point where they considered referring to the matter to the Justice Department for criminal investigation. Thomas Keene, the former New Jersey Republican governor who led the commission, it's called the Keene Commission, said, quote, we to this day don't know why NORAD, the North American Aerospace Command, told us what they told us. It was so far from the truth. It's one of those loose ends that never got tied. Well, then, why not have an investigation? Now, the review here says, make no mistake, Farmer is not saying that 9/11 was an inside job. However, Farmer's testimony, along with that of his fellow 9/11 Commission members, conclusively demonstrates that whatever really happened on 9/11, the official story is told to the public on the day, and that which remains the authority's official version of events is a lie. A lie, according to the very people who were tasked by the government to investigate it. This is a fact that no debunker who keeps saying, oh, you're 9/11 conspiracist, oh, for God's sake, get a life. Oh, you dumbass. You believer, you're one of them, huh? Oh, you silly goose. Those are debunkers. It's a fact that no debunker or government apologist can ever legitimately deny. So, I oh well. It's understandable. The truth on this will never come out. And I'll tell you why. We don't have enough time left. As Chris Hedges wrote, and it was published today, we stand on the cusp of one of the bleakest periods in human history when the bright lights of a civilization blink out. And we will descend for decades into barbarity. The elites have successfully convinced us that we no longer have the capacity to understand the revealed truths presented before us or to fight back against the chaos caused by economic and environmental catastrophe. As long as the mass of bewildered and frightened people fed images that permit them to perpetually hallucinate, as long as that mass exists in this state of barbarism, they may periodically strike out with a blind fury against increased state repression, widespread food and poverty and food shortages, but they will lack the ability and self-confidence to challenge in big and small ways the structures of control. The fantasy of widespread popular revolts and mass movements breaking the hegemony of the corporate state is just that, a fantasy. Now, this is a guy who's been all over the place. Remember, Chris Hedges was a reporter for the New York Times, among other things. He was in Sarajevo during the war in Bosnia. He's been to the occupied territories in Palestine. He's been to Central America. He's kind of El Salvador. He was a war correspondent in El Salvador, Guatemala, Bosnia and Gaza. So now, the question I asked about when the truth of 9/11 will come out is purely rhetorical. It's not coming out, ever. So if you really want to know what happened on September 11, 2001, to the extent that the investigation has been done, listen to the people, the so-called 9/11 truthers, the engineers, the scientists, the people who say, no, the story's a lie and here's why. Listen to them.
Hey, 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 hey. They wonder where they are. Because he left the neighborhood like a rattlesnake shedding his skin. Well, they search the rooms, they check out the groups, and then they photograph them. Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We have a report here from Prairie 2. Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs correspondent. He does have a name. Prairie 2 is his website, prairie2.com. He has subject line, a galley slave rowing toward the edge of the flat earth. Consumer prices were down slightly last month, which sounds like something that would always be a good thing, but in the world we live in, it's not. But on the flat earth business models, U.S. consumer goods are almost entirely made in China, and they've been manipulating their currency to keep prices down. The decline in U.S. consumer prices simply tracks the further decline of American manufacturing. The flat earthers would say this is a good thing since everything is cheaper. Okay, if you still have a job and your pay hasn't been cut, except for your taxes going up to pay the share for all of the people whose jobs went to China and can't pay taxes anymore, it's still okay, they say, except that the collapsing economy is driving down the value of your house and your 401k. Or if you own a small business, it's eating that up too. Initial jobless claims were down slightly last week, but still 100,000 a week above the number that signals job creation. But wait, you say, that would mean we are losing 400,000 jobs a month, and the government says the number of jobs lost is less than 100,000 each month. Don't short out your tinfoil hat. The government isn't cooking the books. They just aren't looking for the problem. Business is rehiring almost as many workers as they fire, but not as hourly employees. They are loading up with low-paid temps and converting the better jobs to contract labor. They wouldn't do this if they could just buy cheap slaves, but driving down wages and eliminating benefits will have to do. These so-called non-employees are also easy to get rid of if business activity turns down. Slaves would need to be fed and hard to sell in a weak economy. Flexibility in labor is a basic tenet of the flat earth business model. Flexibility. So when the double dip recession comes, there will be millions of new unemployed who will have no eligibility for benefits because they have been temps and will need to be supported by the taxpayer or left to die on the street. Either option works just fine for the flat earth business model. Two-thirds of corporations in the United States pay no taxes now and lobby their members of Congress, which is all of them, very hard to make law another tenet of the flat earth business model, to make a new law. And that would be no taxes for corporations or for the people who own them. The end game for the flat earth business model is to end government as we know it. Drown it in the bathtub, remember, is the oft-repeated quote from Grover Norquist. Cutting taxes and increasing spending until government simply can't pay its bills is the strategy. We are getting close to where they think they can make that happen. It's a flat earth, and we're heading for the edge. PrairieNumeral2.com. Yikes. Have you heard of this website, Wiki, as in Wikipedia, WikiLeaks? Tom Leonard, writing for the Telegraph of the UK, writing from New York, but I didn't see this in an American paper. Not that I read every American paper. But the Pentagon has decided that this website, WikiLeaks, it's a site that allows the public to leak sensitive information about fraud and theft and deceit, is a threat to national security after it posted a string of U.S. Army intelligence, quote, secrets, end quote. The article goes on to say, WikiLeaks, a nonprofit organization which tries to offer a means of anonymously exposing confidential documents, has become a thorn in the side of governments and private corporations. Its latest revelation concerns itself, namely a 2008 document attributed to the Army Counterintelligence Center, which concluded that the site constitutes a threat to military operations and U.S. security. The report said the information could be used by foreign intelligence, insurgents, or terrorists for, quote, planning attacks, end quote. The authors warned that the lack of editorial oversight over what could be posted could lead to it being used to spread lies and propaganda. No, that's what Fox News does. The report also revealed that the Army had tried to discover the identity of a possible mole leaking information to the site. An Army spokesman confirmed to the New York Times that the document, which provided no specific evidence to support its fears, was genuine. No specific evidence to support the fears was genuine. Well, good. As long as an Army spokesman confirms that to the New York Times, everything's okay. Leaks to the site that might have alarmed military chiefs include details of military equipment, troop strength, and its publication in 2007 of almost the entire order of battle for U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. WikiLeaks also published a copy of Standard Operating Procedures at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, which purportedly revealed the use of torture. The website, which relies on donations, almost closed down this year because it ran out of money. It has also faced attempts by governments such as those of North Korea and Thailand to block access.
How to get along.
about 25 before the hour. Now, regarding the WikiLeaks, this is, says here, this document is a classified 32-page U.S. counterintelligence investigation into WikiLeaks. Here's just one little paragraph. Quote, the possibility that current employees or moles within the Department of Defense or elsewhere in the U.S. government are providing sensitive or classified information to WikiLeaks.org cannot be ruled out. It concocts a plan to fatally marginalize the organization, the document does. Since WikiLeaks uses, quote, trust as a center of gravity by protecting the anonymity and identity of the insiders, leakers, or whistleblowers, end quote, the report recommends, the identification, exposure, termination of employment, criminal prosecution, legal action against current or former insiders, leakers, or whistleblowers could potentially damage or destroy the center of gravity and deter others considering similar actions from using the WikiLeaks.org website. As an odd justification for the plan, the report claims, quote, several foreign countries, including China, Israel, North Korea, Russia, Vietnam, and Zimbabwe, have denounced or blocked access to the WikiLeaks.org website, end quote. The report provides further justification by enumerating embarrassing stories broken by WikiLeaks, including human rights violations at Guantanamo. So there you go. We have joined what could be considered an axis of, if not evil, certainly of weirdness, the axis of weirdness, China, Israel, North Korea, Russia, Vietnam, Zimbabwe, and now the United States. Wiki, W-I-K-I, leaks, L-E-A-K-S, .org. WikiLeaks.org. You might want to visit it before it is mysteriously shut down. What else we got that is very disturbing? Yeah, I know. We should be talking about the health care plan. I don't know. Like I said at the beginning of the program, as flawed as it is, the thrill I'm getting is just watching these Republican scum just running around with their heads on fire. Today, right after the Congressional Budget Office released its figures, I had to do it. I switched over to the local AM station in the metro Atlanta area that carries the pig man to hear what this bloated bastard had to say. And he had on some Republican member of Congress, and they both agreed that the Congressional Budget Office has been totally corrupted by the Obama administration and that the numbers are not true. The numbers that say it's a budget deficit reduction plan reduce the deficit by $150 billion the first year and by $150 billion or thereabouts in the first 10 years and reduce it by the second 10 years by $1 trillion plus. And the pig man and this scum-sucking Republican were sitting there talking about, now, they've cooked the books. It's not true. Somehow the Obama administration got to the Congressional Budget Office. It's all lies. And you can just imagine the swine who listen to these programs sitting there bobbling their heads up. Yep, Rush is right. Yep, not true. Oh, my God. Now, we told you last night about the McCain-Lieberman S-3081, the bill that is designed to give the President of the United States absolute authority in order to stop those dirty, rotten terrorists. It's against anyone, foreign or American citizen, on our soil or not on our soil. They can be seized upon an order signed off on by the President of the United States. He doesn't issue the order, but he has to sign off on it, is my understanding. There are several constitutional officers who, executive officers who can issue an arrest order. You are then turned over to military authorities, Every single constitutional right you have is dissolved. It does not exist. And you can be held literally forever because the way the law reads, for the duration of our war or our allies' war against terrorism. Now think about that. There has never not been what could be identified as terrorism. Never in the history of the primates that picked up an antelope bone and said, oh, weapon. There has never been a time when there was not a type of action that could be described as terror. Think of the Catholic Church. That's the first one that comes to mind to me, the Catholic Church. They've been a terrorist organization for 2,000 years. But think about it. So indefinite detention in this case means permanent detention, because there will never be a time on this sad, ready-to-collapse planet when there's not something going on somewhere that could be considered an act of terror. Never. So, Tom in California, right, Mike, so disturbed by the presentation of McCain-Lieberman S3081, I spent the morning doing some background searches on Google. What I found is immensely disturbing. I started with a paper found on the Indy Media website. It basically, to show the origination of the language, found in S3081, the reporter, Dan Scott, put two documents side by side, S3081 and a copy of Hitler's discriminatory decree signed into German law on February 28, 1933, which states in various sections, the Constitution of the German Reich are suspended until further notice. Thus, restrictions on personal liberty, on the right of free expression of opinion, including freedom of the press, on the right of assembly and the right of association, and violations of the privacy of postal, telegraphic, and telephonic communications, and warrants for house searches, orders for confiscations, as well as restrictions on property, are also permissible beyond the legal limits otherwise prescribed. End quote. That's from the Hitler's decree signed into German law February 28, 1933. Tom goes on, the writer here, Dan Scott, traces the buildup of S3081 as follows. Obama's appointment of Harvard Law professor Cass Sunstein to the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs as his so-called information czar. Sunstein, a global warming denier, recommended that, quote, government should infiltrate and spy on Americans, their groups and organizations to obstruct free speech, disrupt the exchange of ideas, and disseminate false information to neutralize Americans that might question government. End damn quote. Really? Sunstein's earlier pre-Obama administration recommendations were put into law by Representative Jane Harman, called the bill was called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2008. It was dubbed the Thought Crimes Bill. In this bill, hearsay is enough to detain so-called suspects in military detention. The big hole in the Patriot Act, Tom writes, is that probable cause was necessary to detain a person indefinitely. To get around this, fusion centers have been established. According to Wikipedia, a fusion center is a terrorism prevention and response center that was started as a joint project between the Department of Homeland Security and the Office of Justice Programs between 2003 and 2007. The fusion centers gather information not only from government sources, but also from their partners in the private sector. They are designed to promote information sharing at the federal level between agencies such as the CIA, the FBI, Department of Justice, U.S. military, and state and local level government. As of July last year, 2009, the Department of Homeland Security recognized at least 72 fusion centers. Fusion centers may also be affiliated with an emergency operations center that responds in the event of a disaster. End quote. Now, that's all according to Wikipedia. Tom writes, to top it all off, President Obama recently signed into law Executive Order 12245. 12245, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America, including Section 1 of the International Organization Immunities Act, and in order to extend the appropriate privileges, exemptions, and immunities to the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, it is hereby ordered that Executive Order 12425 of June 16, 1983, Reagan, as amended, is further amended by deleting from the first sentence the words, except those provided by Sections 2C, Section 3, Section 4, Section 5, and Section 6 of that Act, and the semicolon that immediately precedes them. Signed, Barack Obama, the White House, December 16, 2009. Tom writes, what this says is that Interpol need not follow any American law, and whatever information they gather can and will be used by local, state, federal, and private agencies for any purpose they wish. It's as if citizens have now been stripped of their Miranda rights and had them given over to the police and military to do whatever they wish without the pesky restrictions of any law whatsoever. So let's see, Tom writes, all rights and privileges of a human being and American citizens go directly to corporations. Human beings and American citizens have no rights, and Americans must now pledge their allegiance to a God whom we are under. Any discussion is forbidden, and all communications, thoughts, and deeds are the property of corporate governance and authority to do with as they wish. And to question such authority is terrorism. Joshua Tree, California, had another paragraph here. He writes, maybe the only impediment to complete takeover of this country is the health and viability of its citizens. I suppose once the Republicans retake power and revoke and suspend all health care except to the chosen, we'll all be too weak to respond and even start begging to be put out of our miseries with our families sporting the bill for the bullet. It's just too insane. The right revels in thoughts of ultimate suppression, and the elite, liberal, apathetic left just dances away their freedoms in rock and roll fantasies, each one foreseeing their own brand of rapture, be it New Age transformation or the coming of Jesus, while both do nothing in the here and now but surrender everything this country might have been to the violence, poverty, sickness, and disease this country had once stood to defeat. It's over. Tom in Joshua Tree. I have been reading a lot of essay-style reportage that pretty much is in that vein, what Tom just wrote. Chris Hedges, of course, being the dean of this stuff. Hedges writes again from his essay that was posted today, another paragraph. We are living through one of civilization's great seismic reversals. This ideology of globalization, like all so-called inevitable utopian visions, is being exposed as a fraud. The power elite, perplexed and confused, clings to the disastrous principles of globalization and its outdated language to mask the looming political and economic vacuum. The absurd idea that the marketplace alone should determine economic and political constructs led industrial nations to sacrifice other areas of human importance, from working conditions to taxation to child labor to hunger to health and pollution, all on the altar of so-called free trade. It left the world's poor worse off. And the United States with the largest deficits, which can never be repaid in human history. The massive bailouts, stimulus packages, giveaways, and short-term debt, along with imperial wars we can no longer afford, will leave the United States struggling to finance nearly $5 trillion in debt this year. This will require Washington to auction off about $96 billion in debt per week. Once China and the oil-rich states walk away from our debt, which one day has to happen, The Federal Reserve will become the buyer of last resort. The Fed has printed perhaps as much as $2 trillion new dollars in the last 2 years, and buying this much new debt will see it, in effect, print trillions more. This is when inflation, and most likely hyperinflation, will turn the dollar into junk. And at that point, the entire system breaks down. All traditional standards and beliefs are shattered in a severe economic crisis. The moral order is turned upside down. The honest and industrious are wiped out, while the gangsters, profiteers, and speculators walk away with millions. The elite will retreat, as Naomi Klein has written in The Shock Doctrine, into gated communities where they will have access to services, food, amenities, and security denied to the rest of us. We will begin a period in human history when there will be only masters and serfs. The corporate forces, which will seek to make an alliance with the radical Christian right and other extremists, will use fear, chaos, the rage at the ruling elites, and the specter of left-wing dissent and terrorism to impose draconian controls to ruthlessly extinguish opposition movements. And while they do it, they will be waving the American flag, chanting patriotic slogans, promising long order, and clutching the Christian cross. Totalitarianism, George Orwell pointed out, is not so much an age of faith, but an age of schizophrenia. He wrote, quote, "A society becomes totalitarian when its structure becomes flagrantly artificial. That is when its ruling class has lost its function, but succeeds in clinging to power by force or fraud." End quote. Our elites have used fraud. Force is all they have left. Hard times. Hard times. Hard times. I have some more of this. I don't want to, you know, try to squeeze it all in. Did you post this at our website? It's up there now? Okay. We have a break coming here momentarily, so I'll try to weave a little bit more of this in when we come back. What else we got here? There's just so much stuff. I can't keep up. I think I'll just go back to cussing. That way I'll lose a bunch of affiliates. All my audience will leave, say, to hell with this guy. And I can just spend my days playing with the puppy and my night getting sleep. All right, you got any music? You don't start the music till the last damn second, do you? Huh? All right. Alan writes, Mike, I think you're onto something with your comments the other night about the union unraveling. Posts on the web seem to be getting ever more sinister. Recent posts talk of cleansing, driving them into the sea, and saving our nation from liberals or socialists or progressives. Your warning to the militia crazies is sure to fall on deaf ears. Some of them will say, good, who cares if the government puts Islamo-fascists and terrorists into camps forever? Or, this won't apply to a patriotic armed citizen like me. I'm sure a similar attitude prevailed among the Nazi brown shirts until Hitler decided they were a threat to his regime. And remember, those who don't learn from history are surely doomed to repeat it. Alan. is 7 past the hour. I want to quote a little bit more here from Hedges' article today. His writing is getting more and more apocalyptic, but I think that's because it's what else you going to do if you tell the truth about the situation we're facing. He talks about building intentional communities, not hippie communes, but intentional communities where just participating in these communities is not only an act of survival, but an act of resistance. Let me share this with you. It is not accidental that the economic crisis we're involved in will converge with the environmental crisis. In his book, The Great Transformation, written in 1944, Carl Polanyi laid out the devastating consequences, the depressions, wars, and totalitarianism, that grow out of a so-called self-regulated free market. He grasped that, quote, fascism, like socialism, was rooted in a market society that refused to function, end quote. He warned that a financial system always devolves, without heavy government control, into a mafia capitalism and a mafia political system, which is a good description of our financial and political structure. A self-regulating market, Polanyi wrote, turns human beings and the natural environment into commodities, a situation that ensures the destruction of both society and the natural environment. The free market's assumption that nature and human beings are objects whose worth is determined by the market allows each to be exploited for profit until exhaustion or collapse. A society that no longer recognizes that nature and human life have a sacred dimension, an intrinsic value beyond monetary value, commits collective suicide. Such societies cannibalize themselves until they die. This is what we are undergoing. If we build self-contained structures, ones that do as little harm as possible to the environment, we can weather the coming collapse. This task will be accomplished through the existence of small physical enclaves that have access to sustainable agriculture, are able to sever themselves as much as possible from commercial culture, and can be largely self-sufficient. These communities will have to build walls against electronic propaganda and fear that will be pumped out over the airwaves. Canada will probably be a more hospitable place to do this than the United States, given America's strong undercurrent of violence. But in any country, those who survive will need isolated areas of land as well as distance from urban areas, which will see the food deserts in the inner cities, as well as savage violence, leach out across the urban landscape as produce and goods become prohibitively expensive and state repression becomes harsher and harsher. The increasingly overt use of force by the elites to maintain control should not end acts of resistance. Acts of resistance are moral acts. They begin because people of conscience understand the moral imperative to challenge systems of abuse and despotism. They should be carried out not only because they are effective, but also because they are right. Those who begin these acts are always few in number and dismissed by those who hide their cowardice behind their cynicism. But resistance, however marginal, continues to affirm life in a world awash in death. It is the supreme act of faith, the highest form of spirituality, and alone makes hope possible. Resistance. Those who carried out great acts of resistance often sacrificed their security and comfort, often spent time in jail, and in some cases were killed. They understood that to live in the fullest sense of the word, to exist as free and independent human beings, even under the darkest night of state repression, meant to defy injustice. When the dissident Lutheran pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer was taken from his cell in a Nazi prison to the gallows, his last words were, quote, "This is for me the end, but also the beginning," end quote. Bonhoeffer knew that most of the citizens in his nation were complicit through their silence in a vast enterprise of death. But however hopeless it appeared in the moment, he affirmed what we all must affirm. He did not avoid death. He did not, as a distinct individual, survive, but he understood that his resistance and even his death were acts of love. He fought and died for the sanctity of life. He gave, even to those who did not join him, another narrative, and his defiance ultimately condemned his executioners. And an email here from David, who writes, the Hedges article you read tonight is spot on. One of the things that he mentions is the formation of intentional communities. The intentional community movement has a long historical movement you can research, so I won't bog you down. But I think it's time to add some practical solutions along with a critical analysis. It's depressing to hear what's wrong and not get ideas about how we can beat these American Nazis that have taken control of every aspect of our lives. We know things are bad. However, I agree with Hedges. The best way to stop feeding the beast is to move out of it. And intentional communities are the best way to do so. Check out their website, IC.org, for some ideas. There are traditional ICs, not the fear-based yuppie co-housing communities, springing up all over the place. Progressive people are getting off-grid, disconnecting their cable, growing their own food, etc. Talk about solutions, Mike. Millions are listening. David. Millions? No. No, I get the point, David. IC, just the letters IC.org. IC.org. Check it out. Now, as far as Chris Hedges' article tonight, it's at alternet.org. I don't have the absolute URL, but just go to alternet.org. Alternet.org. It's Chris Hedges' latest essay. There's more here. I've just quoted a few parts of it. It's pretty astonishing. Somebody sent it to me, sent me a link to it this afternoon. And I printed off and actually couldn't stop reading it. Like I say, it's scary writing. Hedges is a journalist, philosopher, however you want to put it. But his writing is astonishingly powerful. Scary, but powerful. And David makes a good point. I don't propose solutions to this madness to the extent that I probably should. But and I have to be honest with you and tell you why. And that's because I don't know what they are. I have not checked out intentionalcommunities.org. In fact, that term I had not heard of until today. Yeah, that's right. I'm as ignorant about this stuff as probably 99% of us. So I'll make it my business to check it out now. IntentionalCommunitiesIC.org. But I said long ago, and not to be defiant or a pain in the ass, but I don't have solutions. They do exist, I'm sure. But I guess that's one of the reasons we don't talk about them a lot on this program. I don't know what the hell they are. 21 past the hour. After the next break, we'll take some calls. Michael sent this in regarding another bill in the House. Michael writes, Mike, I haven't had time to listen to your show as much as I like, but I'm not sure if you've covered Representative Alan Grayson's proposed bill, H.R. 4789, which would allow anyone and everyone to buy into Medicare at cost. In other words, this would require absolutely no additional tax money. The simplicity of this four-page bill is such that its meaning should be readily understandable to all but the most staunch, dedicated naysayers. The measure gained 75 co-sponsors in its first 4 days. An online petition has so far gained about 33,000 signatures. There's a YouTube video that includes Representative Grayson's presentation of this bill to the House. There are a number of interviews on YouTube, including some including Grayson, which provide further details. If you've already covered this bill in your show, please accept my sincere thanks. I haven't. In the unlikely event that you have not, I would strongly encourage you to do so. I would contend that this bill deserves nothing less than full public hearing. Michael, I've heard of this. H.R. 4789, which would allow anyone and everyone to buy into Medicare. At cost. I'm not sure what that means. I guess at the same cost that Medicare users or recipients pay now. And I don't know what that is. I have no idea. I'll keep your email, Michael, and check it out. This is kind of interesting from Steve in Grapevine, Texas. Mike, I finally had enough of this pathetic excuse for a nation, especially this state, Texas. The state of insanity where I live. I'm about a year away from retirement, U.S. Postal Service. Today I applied to the Canadian government to begin the immigration process so I can spend my retirement years in a rational and compassionate environment, Vancouver. I can't handle this religious right-wing hog snot anymore. I never thought I would long for the day that I would no longer live in the U.S. I grew up in Texas. While growing up, we had great politicians like Jim Hightower and Ann Richards. Today we have Rick Perry and John Cornyn. Not only are they pitiful excuses for politicians? These creatures are disgusting excuses for human beings. And then there is this religious fervor crap that is sweeping this state. They now have now taken the godless Thomas Jefferson out of the history books. I suppose the next move will have Davy Crockett riding dinosaurs and killing Mexicans at the Alamo, while the Holy Trinity, God, Jesus, and Ronald Reagan applaud approvingly. I think Steve's a little pissed off here. Anyway, I've had it with these Beckish Limbots that only care about who got booted on American Idol, who is Tiger Woods banging today, which country should we invade next, or how much they can personally steal or destroy. They don't give a blankety blank about anything or anyone else. The only thing I will miss would be Cindy Sheehan when she comes to town. When protesting outside of Bush's house, I am always filled with great pride and a true American spirit while standing by Cindy's side and the other true patriots protesting with us. It appears that these may be the only decent people that haven't already left. I would say that Texas has become a sewer, but that would be an insult to sewers. Yikes, Steve. Oh, and I love this, this ongoing, it should be the utter destruction of the Catholic Church as an institution. These abuse cases that are sweeping across Europe and the cover up by the Nazi Pope all the way up the top. There was an interesting comment. There's a guy over there, Cardinal Brady. He is the Sean Brady. He's in Northern Ireland, and he's been giving apologies. He delivered his apology before Pope Benedict is due to issue a letter to Irish bishops addressing just the problem in Ireland. Brady has raised many calls for his resignation in the wake of revelations that he took part in an abusive investigation in 1975, in which a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old were forced to sign secrecy oaths. Brady, who was a priest at the time, never went to the police. The priest who had been accused, the Reverend Brendan Smythe, or Smith, was convicted in the 90s and admitted to molesting and raping over 100 children in Ireland and the United States. In an interview with Irish State Radio Monday, Cardinal Brady answered the calls for his resignation by saying that, quote, he was not a manager and not a bishop, end quote, when as a 36-year-old priest, then working as a school teacher, he was asked by his bishop to participate in interviews with the two children who had been abused by Father Smythe. In his sermon on St. Patrick's Day, the cardinal said, quote, the Lord is calling us to a new beginning. None of us knows where that new beginning will lead. And in a radio interview earlier this week, Cardinal Brady said that under the procedure then mandated by the church, it had not been his responsibility to inform the police that this priest was abusing children. And then he said this, we had no guidance. We were in uncharted territory, and now we have higher standards. You son, you rat bastard, you filthy, filthy, degenerate priest. What do you mean you didn't have guidelines? You had the law. You think raping children is legal?
It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Anyway, Cardinal Brady, the leader of the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland, said he'll resign if the Pope asks him to. Only. You know, a lot of people are demanding that this monster get out of town. This you know, I said last night, and I mean it, the main organizing principle of the Catholic Church is child molestation, pedophilia. And don't think for a moment this is something new. This is centuries old. This is just what they do. There is something degenerate about the Catholic Church hierarchy, the way they are put together. It is an autonomous criminal enterprise that is beyond the scope of just about any law. But what is astonishing me to me is what I said right before the break. In a radio interview earlier this week, Cardinal Brady said that under the procedures then mandated by the church, it was not his responsibility to report child molestation, child rape to the police. This freak, this guy, Cardinal Brady, this is the head of all Irish Catholics. Listen to this statement. He said, quote, we had no guidance. We were in uncharted territory. And now we have higher standards, thankfully. What? He is saying there was no guidance about what to do when you had incontrovertible evidence of the rape of children by Catholic priests. This is what the man is saying. We didn't know what to do. Astonishing. And this guy heads the Catholic Church in Ireland. So he'll only resign if his Pope asks him to. Yesterday, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany called the many charges of sexual abuse surfacing in her country in recent months a major challenge to German society. And warned that the only way to come to terms with the issue was, her words, quote, truth and clarity about everything that took place, end quote. Wow. I don't know. I'm every place you turn, it's like a Leonard Cohen song. What was that song? What's that song his about? No, everything's breaking down. And they said, "Repent." Is it repent? I wonder what they meant. Anthem, have you got that? Will you get it? Get handy. It's weird. It's a weird song. It's let me do a call while she's finding that. Steven's in Burbank listening to Sirius. Hey, Steven.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
In the email box today, there was a communication of encouragement from Sanchez, and I don't mind dropping his name because he said I could.
Okay.
And it was like, when are you going to call Mike? And I said, well, if my dismal brain, you know, gets stimulated to something I can respond to, something I could relate to, I'll call him. And so I did. And so here we are. And so it's about, you know, expression. You know, you express yourself vocally with strong language. And I can relate to that as being a bass player. And they were telling me that the discipline in playing bass is not to play the notes you want to play. And then even if you get to the point where it's okay to do that, what I have written down here on my notes and what I was going to say to you is headbangers aren't going to understand a jazz solo. And so I've gotten money playing jazz. And what also happened was did recording in a studio, and some the kids of jazz players took it, played for their dads. The dads came back. The word came back, and their fathers accused me of being a B word. And I'm going, what's that mean? You're cute. I don't know if I can say that word since we're trying to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, we are.
But they said, that's good. That's good. Don't worry about it. It's good. And the same thing is happening with Dave Marsh. You know, he's getting a lot of calls, you know, come on.
Yeah,
blah,
yeah.
Blah. But he cuts loose occasionally, and it's quite okay.
Well, I'll tell you, the truth is, Stephen, and thanks, Stephen, you know, as long as I'm broadcasting on three venues, satellite radio, internet, and over-the-air radio, I've got to follow the rules. Not rules, because I haven't violated any FCC rules, but the rules that are laid out by, you know, station managers, because they understand their audience. You know, I'm sitting here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains. I don't know what people in this market or that market or here or there, what they, you know, what they tolerate. I listen to Liz Samuels on Sirius in the afternoon sometimes. I love Liz Samuels. And because of satellite radio, of course, Liz uses the F-bomb whenever it's appropriate. And with Miss Samuels, it's appropriate about every 30 seconds, bless her heart. But, you know, I mean, she's not on terrestrial radio. And I am, so. That's what we're dealing with. And I've got to, thanks, Stephen. I've got to respect the program directors and listeners, not just program directors, but the listeners. You know, I get kind of tired of saying, well, if you don't like it, just turn it off. I can say that if it concerns a point of view, but you know, so that's what we're about. Did I say Liz Samuels? I mean Lynn. I want to play a little bit of this Leonard Cohen song. When I first heard this, I thought, oh, this is a little bit over the top. It's the future, not anthem. It's not over the top at all.
You never did. I was a little too. Who wrote the Bible? I've seen the nations rise and fall. Stories, heard them all, but love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold.
riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Blizzard of across the threshold, overturned the order of the song. It's a great song. Leonard Cohen, of course, is one of the greatest poet, singer, songwriters in the history of that art form, and he's Canadian, of course. Michael in Roswell writes regarding Cardinal Brady and his inability to pick up the phone and say, we have rape in our sanctuary. Michael writes, this is very much dominionist thinking, that God's law is superior to the law ordained by men. It's a perversion encouraged by those with no respect whatsoever for democracy. That the Catholic Church has some affinity for fascists, well, this should come as no surprise. Yeah, this is what, you know, the Michelle Bachmanns and the really crazy, psychopathic, dominionist Christian murderers out there, they go by the same belief that the law here on poor old tired planet Earth and corrupt, degenerate United States of America is secondary to God's law. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? Every single one of them. This story about Sean Hannity, you have a link up at our website. I don't know the blogger who wrote it, but I understand she's, you know, conservative, right wing, whatever. But to expose Sean Hannity's organization it takes some courage, I think, first. And secondly, I'm just wondering if there are any veterans in this tired, about to be dismembered country who are willing to go to New York tomorrow when Hannity gets an award for abusing your children and spiritually and emotionally raping your wives while you were fighting so that Hannity wouldn't have to, huh?
When they say, repent, 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 I wonder what they meant. When they say, repent, 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 I wonder what they meant.
The way we came to be.
About 9 before the hour, got this email from BS. Hi, Mike. The Democrats. With friends like these, who needs enigmas? Where are we? There we are. Gene is in San Francisco. Hey, Gene.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just wanted to call and tell you, at our house, we are big fans of your euphemism, fat squeeze.
Yeah? You like
and,
that,
And
huh?
we, it's not so much the words, it's the Malloy inflection.
Is that what it is?
And I can hardly hear you, but I'll just finish up by saying all the more Malloyisms that we hear, the happier we'll be.
Well, that's
so
good.
Give us any substitutes for those other words you can dream up and just give them that at Malloy inflection, and boy, that would be great.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you, Gene. I'm sorry it's hard to do we have a phone problem again, Kathy? No? Speaking of Sanchez in Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Hey, very good evening to you, sir.
Hi.
Hey, I'm calling to respond here. I just cannot resist the obvious question. As you were reading earlier this evening about the ACLU obtaining the 9/11 commission that was told not to cross the line.
Right, right.
Everything that I'm reading in this article here is begging the question. So all these years, all this time they've been sitting on this information, why hasn't anyone taken any action on this? In particular, somebody like Bob Kerry. Why has the truth been withheld this long? I mean, here's something. I don't know if you've seen this, Mike, but there is a very telling YouTube video up. It was produced by a group here in Los Angeles. They're called We Are Change LA. On YouTube, if you put into the search engine, Bob Kerry, 9/11, you'll see something pop up called 9/11 Commissioner Bob Kerry finally confesses 9/11 Commission could not do its job. There's a three-part, and at the very end of the three parts, Kerry almost in earnest wants to tell the interviewers that it's part of a 30-year plan.
Right, but you know, a cynic or a realist would state the obvious, Sanchez, that Kerry is part of the elite in this country. He's, you know, what stops Kerry from calling a press conference and just saying, okay, let me give you blow by blow, word by, you know, like what's his name did with the Pentagon Papers. What is, who was it? Jeez, I'm drawing
Ellsberg.
Another. Yeah, Daniel Ellsberg. What's stopping Kerry from having an Ellsberg moment? Kerry, and I can answer the question. Kerry's part of the establishment. He's part of the elites. He's not concerned about, I mean, he doesn't give a tinker's damn about what is going on in this country. He would like to be in on the part that makes the decisions. And I think he has enough, I don't know if it's, decency is the word I'm looking for, a compassion or a sense of justice to drop these little hints that the whole thing was a hoax, a myth, and a scam. But what's to stop any of these people? What's to stop, look, you got to remember that the people involved in the 9/11 commission, in the upper reaches of this thing were all involved in cover-ups in the past. That's why they were hired.
Yeah.
Lee Hamilton? My God, come on. So, what we have here is, I mean, you and I should not wonder why Bob Kerry doesn't come forward and hasn't come forward, and none of them have or ever will.
Dare I say the letter CIA?
Well, I don't even think you have to do that. I think all you have to say is they are part of the ruling elite. They don't like being made fools of, and they're being made fools of when Cheney and Bush refused to testify under oath, when it became clear that they did not have subpoena power, they were not allowed to question certain people, they couldn't do this, they couldn't do that, and then they got this memo from Dick Cheney that says, back off.
Yes.
You know, so nothing pisses off an elite more than when another elite tells him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Bob Kerry is no champion of the people. Good God,
understood.
No.
Understood, but generation after generation of Americans are being made, as well as the rest of the people of the rest of the world, who actually know better than Americans are, because they're more informed about these activities than most American sheeple are. But the American sheeple are waking up, and they don't like to be made fools of. And there's a growing impatience. The truth is out there. It is out there like a screaming dinosaur with a bad case of bad breath. And you know, there's going to be a march on all over the country protesting the war this weekend, and we're going to be asking those very questions. you know, we're getting very impatient about this, Mike. That's all I got to tell you about this.
Well, I understand, and rightly so, getting impatient about it. But Sanchez, and we're going to have to boogie here. Thanks, man. But it, you know, read Chris Hedges' piece today at alternet.org. Just read that. I hate to say it, but I've said it before, so I might as well say it again. Sure, I'll probably participate in another march sometime, but they are futile and worthless. They really are. I mean, the battle's already been fought. You know, the winners are counting the corpses. And you and I, Sanchez, are not among or not on the winning team. There's a way to resist, but I don't think another demonstration is the way to go. I don't know. Maybe so. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Do you know one?